Welcome to the Real Triathlon Podcast. I'm your host, Garrick Lowen, here with Nicholas Chase and Jackson Lund.
Welcome back. We've got a great episode today. Obviously, this is the podcast that you're going to learn a lot from. You're going to meet people. And Scott Tindall, of course, is someone you want to know. Scott, your name's been flowing around a lot lately. Obviously, look at Fuel In. That's what you're kind of spearheading right now. And of course, it's a pleasure to have you on. There's a lot of science, a lot of nutrition stuff I want to talk about. But first and foremost, how you doing, brother?
Very well, Nick. Thank you for having me. Apologies for my voice. It's a little bit croaky today. I'm not sure if it's from the children who are a little bit sick or me probably being out last night with a few friends.
Yeah, we had a little pre-show chat, buddy, and you sent it, so I'm not surprised you're a little froggy. So first and foremost, one of the most controversial, educational, black holes, golden tickets, like nutrition has everything, especially because the majority of people who are searching for nutritional advice are getting it from sometimes the wrong sources, and those are just from people who want to sell you something to make money. And I think that's the biggest problem most anybody trying to shore up their diet kind of comes across is, what am I seeing on Instagram most? And I tell you what, I just want to jump right into this one. And we don't have to spend a lot of time on it because there's a ton. Ketones, why do I see those everywhere? And is that like really the golden ticket? I've tried it, didn't work for me, but have you had a lot of folks in your expertise work from it?
I'm certainly not an expert on ketones. I do get asked about it a lot, and I've been reading the research. I have tried them. I've tried Delta G's. I have spoken to the CEO about it. It was probably the worst thing I've ever tasted in my life. And I did do a Instagram reel of my experience on it. The blue one, the ketone performance, actually the blueberry one didn't taste too bad compared to the other one, the elite one. But look, I was chatting to him the other day, and obviously, you know, there's a difference in ketones.
Yeah.
Related to, you know, the formulations. And my understanding is Delta G is the original formulation from Oxford, and that's where a lot of the research has been done, as opposed to these other diols, which are sort of more ethanol-based or alcohol-based. And there could be potentially some downsides related to a narcotic effect from large consumption of those other types of ketones. And I think there's going to be some pretty interesting research coming out on that, just as an FYI, and for people taking large amounts of those types of ketones, it could be pretty interesting. In terms of performance, I think this is good. Like, again, speaking to the guys at Delta G, I think they're pretty open to saying that, you know, a lot of the promise now seems to be in recovery,
yeah,
with ketones. And I think that seems to be coming out in the research with a possible advantage of them in terms of protein metabolism or maintaining net protein balance and reducing protein catabolism and things like that. What does that mean for an athlete? I think it means that you've got to be doing some pretty extreme training and have a fair bit of training volume and training load to warrant the need for something like that. And again, I'm not saying, I think for pro athletes who have, or, you know, up and coming elite age groupers who are maybe doing a hell of a lot of training, potentially there could be some benefits. And certainly we're looking at dabbling into that and just seeing if there is anything to it with some of our pro athletes. I think what I would stress to any age group athlete is, are you doing everything else nutrition wise before spending that amount of money on something that may give you 1-3%? So
upset stomach.
Or a really upset stomach. Yeah. I certainly wouldn't take them during a race. I do know athletes who take them during races, and I'm like, how do you do that? I tried that on my ultra and it was just horrible. Like, it did not make me feel very good at all. But you know, dial in, do the basics. Like, we know, Nick, I mean, the basics are what often gets the results, isn't it? So, you know, is your protein intake optimized? Are you taking in adequate or optimal amounts of carbohydrates relative to your training load? And where does your fat intake sit regarding, you know, what you're trying to achieve from a body composition, body weight perspective, because that's calories. And I think if you're doing those three things right, you know, total calories first and foremost, then you start looking at, you know, macro splits, and then you start looking at meal timing. If you're doing all those things right and you're absolutely dialed in with that, maybe some cheaper supplements that you're taking in, something like creatine monohydrate. If you're hydrating appropriately based on what you require, you're sleeping probably at least 8 to 9 hours a night because you're training a hell of a lot. 7 hours is certainly not going to be enough for you. If you're doing all those things, then okay, maybe it might be interesting to dabble in it and see how you go as N equals one. But up until then, yeah, it's not something we tend to push hard at this point in time. But like everything nutrition, there's certainly doors that can be left open, and willing to try things based on, you know, anecdotal field and the research.
Absolutely. And thank you for that. I know I just jumped into that one because that was mostly something I've kind of had a little bit of a bone to pick with the industry lately, when everyone has just talked about it during races. And I've just not really felt that buzz personally. And I wanted to get your opinion. So thank you so much.
I guess, Nick, the reality is, though, like what you're seeing is as a result of marketing. You know, that's the game, isn't it? It's marketing. It is. And, you know, when you see more of a product on Instagram, it's because marketing dollars are there. And that's just the reality. You know, what you hope is that athletes recommending these products are doing it from an authentic space.
Yeah.
That they are using the product, and that product is actually having a very beneficial effect on them. And now that may be subjective, but hopefully they've done some objective sort of work as well, and maybe taken bloods before or after. Maybe they're looking at performance data, you know, things that you might as a coach want to see improvements in. Maybe it's reductions in muscle soreness, whatnot. But yeah, you know, you'd certainly hope that the athlete recommending any product is coming from a very authentic space and not just taking the dollars.
Yeah, I think that's as the sport develops, grows, sees a little bit more cash coming in, that'll be a fine line all of us have to ride on.
You know, you mentioned there, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, the reality is I work for a company. I have a company. Yeah, we push nutrition to sell the program. I guess what I'm very proud of is the athletes who do represent the brand from a professional standpoint. You know, they believe in the brand because they work with it every day, and they truly are authentic in their posts. And that's what we want as a company. And that's what I think everyone should strive for with whatever product they're doing. Yeah, we sell products, but we sell a product we believe in.
Yeah, I think that's most definitely why Real Triathlon Squad as an entity that I'm proud of as well. We've wanted to build that bridge with you all to set our athletes up under that program. And obviously this isn't an opportunity to just sell programs. This is an opportunity to get to know Scott a bit. You've been part of some major teams in your career. You've had a lot of walks of life. I can't even imagine the level of stories you have, the fun times, the lessons learned with the Leafs, with some of the Ironman athletes advisory board, looks like even Team Oracle USA and the England Lions cricket team, professional rugby teams. You've definitely had a consortium. Consortium?
Consortium. Yeah.
Consortium of opportunities to work with some of the best talents out there. So again, that's why you're here. And that's why when you talk about Fuel In and working with pro athletes, I listen, because you know, you've got that salt and pepper beard, you've got the glasses, you're selling the package too, man. I want to buy it.
Yeah, there's been some years under the belt. I actually didn't have much salt and pepper until I had kids, I've decided. So that's definitely aged me. But no, thank you. It's been a really interesting journey, and probably not one that I, you know, planned out in the way it has happened. But, you know, I don't always think you have to have a strict plan in life and being adaptable. Actually, I was reading a quote today about consistency and adaptability. And, being consistent, it's a quote by James Clear. I don't know if you followed James Clear. I really like his stuff. He's the one who wrote.
I may have posted that recently also.
He wrote Atomic Habits, and he just posted a quote. I love his newsletter. It's very good for anyone, you know, listening. But he said about consistency, and effectively saying consistency is about being adaptable. And I really related to training, and it related to nutrition for me, and sort of resonated because, you know, the thing is, and think about training for a perspective, it's like, for a minute, it's like, okay, kids are sick, kids are crying, for instance, I'm, you know, don't have the energy in that. And my coach puts in like a 2 hour zone two session. It's like, well, be adaptable, just do an hour, just do something. And it's the same with nutrition. Oh God, I'm out. I don't know what to eat. Oh, I could just have the burger, or, you know, maybe just opt for the chicken or the steak. Okay, it's not perfect, but at least you've been adaptable in your approach. You've done the best that you can given the situation. And I love that. He always comes up with brilliant sort of like just little takeaway quotes. And I just think it's a really good takeaway for anyone listening is like, be consistent. And we bang on about consistency and fuel in, because that's what's going to make, or that's what's really going to make the difference. Consistency with nutrition, much like consistency in training, but be adaptable in that consistency, and then you'll get the results. It's not like a pass or fail, is it? It's just process over perfection. Do your best. If you do your best consistently, you will see results.
I think that is why our culture has such a hard time with nutrition, is because we live in a very pass fail life where it's, you're late for work by a second, or you're early and you're rewarded. So I think there's a lot of juxtapositions when it comes to how we think about everything else. And then also, hold on, someone's just delivering food to my house right now for my kid. All right, Garrick, we'll have to cut that out real quick.
Uber Eats.
I was actually, I had to get my kid a burrito. I was going to take him, but I didn't have time.
Sorry.
No. This is my life. Don't you worry. So essentially what it comes down to for me is we don't even have the tools sometimes mentally that we've been given as a culture to adapt to a food lifestyle that supports our busy schedules. And we're kind of trying to put a round peg into a square hole sometimes. And then when an athlete comes to you, Scott, and they're like, fix my nutritional problems, you've got to rewire the whole circuit board in a lot of ways, because like you said, consistency is one thing, but all of these things we've built in since the age between, you know, whatever, 1 and 8, you're the most influenced in your life, and those habits are going to carry on forever. So let's say you had a bad experience with X, Y, and Z. You may never be able to change your mind until it's absolutely a necessity. So nutrition is rooted. It's deep in your person. It's like, it's your code. And I'm sure that you have to deal with this all the time, since you do work so one-on-one with some of these high-end athletes and then also high-performing CEOs. What have you found is one of the ways out to maintain consistency? Because I think it's good to talk about having consistency, but what are some, you know, if you had top three things that build a consistent fueling strategy, how does that look for a high-performing individual with kids, yada yada? You know, I'm guessing I'm asking you something that's pretty grindy here, but I know
it's a great question. I love when I get a question I haven't necessarily been asked before. So I'm just thinking about what would I do. I'm thinking of a CEO. Look, a lot of this is just, it's habit formation, isn't it? So be consistent, it's about habits. So I guess the first thing, like often I talk about with athletes, and like the really shitty thing with nutrition, and I get stuck in this as well. We start talking, and I was talking to someone the other day, actually it was on one of our Q&As, and they talked about an article that Elizabeth Impen, one of our nutrition coaches, wrote for Training Peaks. And it didn't mention, and the guy said it was one of the best articles he's read recently about nutrition, because it did not mention a grams per kilo of body weight, about macronutrients or anything. It was all about habits and habit formation. So I would encourage anyone listening to just go on to Training Peaks and just find that article by Elizabeth Impen about habit formation. But that's what it's about. Like, and it's, so I would start someone with their environment. if your environment is not set up to succeed, then you're going to fail. So go into your fridge, go into your pantry, and have a look. Like, do you have really good sources of protein in there? If you're an omnivore, do you have chicken? Do you have lamb? Do you have beef? Do you have fish? If you're a vegan, do you have, you know, tofu? Do you have tempeh? Do you have seitan? Do you have impossible meats? Whatever it is that you're using as your protein supply. Then in your fresh, like down in the crisper, do you have heaps of, you know, leafy greens, vegetables? Do you have lots of different fruits? You know, what are your fruits of choice? Then go and, you know, do you have your milks, your yogurts, whether it's, you know, nut milk or normal cow's milk? Do you have enough of that to get you through the week? Do you have eggs if you eat eggs? Like, is everything in there? And then what else is in there? Is there a heap of soft drink? Is there a heap of chocolate? Is there a heap of just crap that isn't going to allow you to do whatever it is that you're trying to do? Like, again, if you are trying to lose weight, and I find this funny that we can't talk about losing weight, even though the majority of the world is obese. I know not all triathletes are probably don't sit in that space, but there are still, you know, I think we had looked at the stat, 90 odd percent of athletes coming onto Fuel In have a weight goal or a target goal that is less than their current weight. So it is like, it's just fact. There are a lot of athletes out there that are trying to lose some weight. Whether they need to lose it or not, okay, that's another question. But there are still a lot of overweight or obese triathletes and athletes out there who they maybe got into the sport to actually improve their health. So if then they're looking in their fridge and it's full of takeaway and Coca-Cola and soft drinks and, you know, really highly processed foods, that's not going to allow them to do that. So pantry the same, freezer the same. Start with environment.
So start with the environment. Now, excuse me. I feel like this is a tough one because it, in a best case scenario, everyone can have access to the produce. They can prepare it. They know how to cook. They've got the time to prepare. Now, I'd say even the athletes I coach most of the time, they should be hiring someone to just prepare their food for them because they can afford it. And that's the number one thing I tell them is if you can afford it, and someone can manage your nutrition because you don't have time. You've got 4 hours in the day. That's it for you. And you don't want to spend time cooking, packing, cleaning. Have someone do it for you. But if you can't, it's tough because you've got to search for something quick and easy. And if you've got to feed the kids. So, Scott, I'm not trying to grind you down on that one, but it's tough to integrate.
Nick, I don't disagree that it's not easy. What I would say, and this is really, I love getting this feedback, is again, when athletes, like, you can treat cooking as a form of relaxation as well. Like if you approach it and you like, I love cooking. I find it relaxing. Yeah. Sometimes it depends if stuff's going wrong, but yeah, use that as a form of, you know, an opportunity to catch up with your partner. You know, if that's the time, get them to sit. If they want to have a glass of wine and they sit at the bench whilst you prepare your food, and maybe you over-prepare in terms of you do double so that you've got leftovers. You don't have to be gourmet either. So like the number one starting place again, okay, so if we go from the environment and then we go into maybe just simple things like, okay, what can an athlete prepare that takes minimal time but produces a lot of food? So then I would say slow cooking, roasting. If, I mean, literally to roast a chicken, you cut a lemon up, cut it in half, put it up its bum, cover it in a little bit of olive oil, bit of salt and pepper, cut up some potatoes, put them all on the potatoes, root veggies, whatever, put that on the base, a little bit of olive oil, put the chicken on top, put it in the oven. You're talking, I reckon I could do that in less than 5 minutes. Now the cooking time is 90 minutes, but you don't have to sit there and watch it cook. It's the same with slow cooking, like beef, like everyone loves slow cooked beef short ribs.
Especially ramen. Ramen, easy.
There you go. Put it in a pressure cooker or put it in a stainless, like I have one of those Le Creuset, beautiful sort of slow cooking. What do you call them? The Dutch ovens. Yeah, I love it. and just stick a heap of stuff in there, put the meat in. 5-6 hours later, your house smells amazing. You've got food for days. Stick in a pork shoulder in, you know, with whatever spices and stock and everything. Stick that in. And literally 6 hours later, you've got pulled pork for the rest of the week that you can freeze, you can heat fresh. You can then have it on tortillas. You can have it with salad. You can put it in a sandwich, a toasty. Yeah. Like,
I've found that the best meals that I've been able to sustain myself off of as an athlete with a busy schedule is, and I'm sure you'll grin at this, is just peasant meals. Everything that,
like stews and things.
Yeah,
is that what
stews,
you mean?
Yeah. Cabbages, like just rice and rice bowls. And like, you can just bang so much nutrition and caloric depth into a bowl. It's insane the amount of ease that goes along with that.
And that, like I get everyone's busy, but the thing that I love when I get feedback about this is when people start to cook again, they're like, oh my God, I forgot how much I love cooking and actually how much I love food. And by cooking, you start to control your nutrition. So like, you've just ordered a burrito. Awesome. Like, fine. Again, come back to consistency and adaptability. You need a burrito for your kid. Otherwise he's going to be screaming. Fine. But you don't know what's in that burrito, how much vegetable oil, whether they use vegetable oil, olive oil, I'm guessing vegetable oil, the quality of the mince that's gone into it, the quality of the vegetables. Now, you could make that burrito at home pretty quickly. Yeah, obviously you have to cook some rice and stuff like that. But when you make it at home, you know what's gone into it. And as good as we can be in tracking and trying to count calories or macro track and things like that, if you haven't made that and you're constantly eating out and getting meal deliveries, I will probably put money on that it's going to be far more difficult for that individual athlete to achieve whatever it is they're trying to achieve than someone who is cooking for themselves 80 to 90% of the time.
I think so it comes down.
Number two would be try and cook for yourself. Simple meals.
Yeah, and the planning. So the environment, then the planning around those simple meals. And you'd probably agree too, if you feel good about what you're eating and you've invested time and love into it, and I've always just felt like cooking for others and giving a meal to somebody in your family is like one of the most authentic things you can do. And it's overlooked to the highest extreme, is just something you do. But mealtime is the biggest sacrifice is the American family has lost, is we just don't do it.
So that would probably be the third thing, is like, try and get some, like, I have two kids under two or around two. It is a nightmare dinner time, but we sit down every night and we have dinner together, little kitties in their high chairs and food goes everywhere. But we're trying to establish that habit of mealtime. And they can't talk or anything like that. He's late to talk, Jack. But, you know, we just sit and talk. We talk to him. We talk to Izzy. And I think, again, like, that is a really important part of health, community. And that starts, I think, in the family environment. And if you're eating together, do you know what also happens? You tend to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, like, you can talk about, like, you know, little habits. So something, if people struggle with eating really quickly, like, so you can put the fork into the meat, you put the food into your mouth. You have to put your fork down and you cannot pick up your fork again until you finish that mouthful.
I like it.
What that encourages you to do is to chew your food properly, because you sit there in front of the TV and what do? You fork in.
Yeah.
And you're just through. And then before you know it, you finished your meal in 5 minutes. And you're like, oh my God, I'm still hungry. Why? Because the brain has not registered that anything is in your stomach, because you've got receptors in your stomach called mechanoreceptors, and they work on distension. So when they're stretched, that then triggers a signal to the brain.
Ghrelin, yeah.
You've consumed. So then things like leptin will go up, because that puts, and think about leptin and ghrelin. Leptin, I always think leptin, lid. Leptin puts a lid on, you know, your hunger, and that allows you to do it. So that's where things like eating slowly is important. Maybe drinking some water before, you know, 20 minutes before your meal, to slow you down. If you want to drink a protein shake before dinner, that's a little bit extra calories. Firstly, you get the protein. It fills you up. So you go into dinner and you're not starving. I think that's like there's so many little things here that like, if you go out to dinner as well and you're starving, what do you do? You overeat.
Oh yeah, the apps, the salad, the meal, it's an extra $80 right there. They just get you.
So, I mean, there's so many little, and look, I think those habits, now you obviously have little key habits and things that we will go through like in a checklist, but then it's talking to the individual like yourself and going, you know, man, this is what I really struggle with. What can I do? Okay, let's try this and let's try this. I can think of, okay, so two athletes at the moment. One is Ari Clough. I don't know if you know Ari.
We know Ari.
Oh, you know Ari. Yeah. So, you know.
He's my ketone guy. I see him advertising ketones.
I talked to him about those ketones, trust me. Yes, we've talked about those ketones. But his whole thing is about calories at the moment. He just has to get calories in. Now, he's getting criticized a little bit for the quality of those calories. But I'm like, man, we got to start somewhere. Because previously, he's gone into low energy availability, red S symptoms, things like that, because he was training a lot. Caloric intake was not matching or anywhere near what his energy expenditure was. So he was getting in a hole. Mm-hmm. And then it breaks down. So now it's like, let's just get you eating calories. And in order to, as you know, mate, like training goes up, calorie density becomes king or queen. And it's like, that means ultra processed and processed foods. So now this is the reverse of what I've just said that you're looking for in your environment if you're trying to lose weight. But if you're trying to maintain weight or even gain weight and you're doing a lot of training volume, the only way we can get adequate amounts of calories into you is probably through some pretty nasty foods.
Yeah, that's what I've seen too.
and that's, look, I'm not saying it's great, but we have to keep that fiber down because otherwise he's going to get too full. He is eating fiber and he's trying to eat more vegetables and fruits. That's great. Rolled oats for fiber, things like that. Yeah, if he's got to eat a Big Mac or a Zinger burger or anything like that, like I'm all right with it at the moment. You know, like we can work on his diet quality over time, but at the moment, his priority is not losing weight and having enough energy to swim 60 kilometers a week.
Yeah, I just saw that too.
It's, I mean, phenomenal.
So I think
horses for courses, I think is,
yeah.
You nutrition is so cool in that respect because, yeah, again, like to what you said at the start, it's like you see all this stuff and nutrition is so polarizing because you have these zealots, don't you? You're either high carb, low fat, or you're low carb, high fat. And it's like, well, why can't you just be somewhere in between and just do what's necessary to support your body? And that might be a good segue into maybe, I think, what we were going to talk about next.
Absolutely. And just to wrap that discussion up, you know, Matt Fitzgerald, a long time ago, wrote a book called Diet Cults. And that was the one that fixed me. He called that type of eating paradigm healthy agnostic eating, because once you find yourself into a certain type of eating, it's an all or nothing approach. And it's usually for, you know, a philosophy or just a rule. And if you break that rule, then you're off the cliff and you've thrown it all away. And I don't believe in that anymore. And it's been so, I guess, freeing to just understand that you do not, like, you can eat a little bit of everything depending on the structure, the time of your day, where you are in your training cycle. And, you know, the environment that I set myself up with, the planning ahead of time, the community, it takes the whole family to be involved. And I think that's also part of the equation too, is you've got to have a partnership with your spouse or your housemates or whoever you've got around you to make sure that that pantry isn't the junk drawer of the, of, I mean, like you said, there is a time and a place for some calories that are not quite healthy in the quote unquote healthy area. It's just calorie. And I think that's what I figured out is for breakfast, it's like eggs, toast, butter, avocado, after my first session. Lunch is a snack. It's I have to eat processed foods throughout the day during training because I got to keep fiber low so I can keep the intensity up. But after about 4 o'clock in the evening, I'm eating an actual meal that I've slow cooked or that we've got a roast or some ramen, and it's full of calorie density and nutrient density. So that's what I think I was trying to get is whatever your work life environment with training is, because most people we work with, Scott, are out of the house for 8 to 9 hours a day, or they're in traffic and they're dealing with trying to have a good group lunch at dinner or a group lunch with their colleagues, and then trying to think about what they're going to eat right before dinner when they got to train. So I think that's really the hardest part is teaching. And this is where you come in. This is why Fuelin is such a great product, because it teaches you how to eat properly with this lifestyle. And it looks at your stress. It looks at the load of the day, and it plans ahead of time for you. And I think we'll get into that, of course, but the next segue, which we're going to go into, is carbs. Carbs are not the enemy. Carbs are what I burn every ounce of my brain power on. Scott, how are you feeling about carbs?
Yeah, I feel pretty good about carbs, and so do most of our athletes. Back to your point, like I love that, like, you know, they're agnostic, and we often refer to ourselves as being agnostic. We're product agnostic generally. We believe in products that are good, like we recommend products that work. But same in terms of nutritional philosophies. I think we are agnostic. Like, we just base it on what we know in the current research and what we see in the field. And yeah, we do recommend carbohydrates, but we're not crazy. Like, we don't say everyone needs 120 grams of carbs. Like, that's also should be based on the athlete and their ability to consume large amounts of carbs and also perform very well on those large amounts of carbs. And that's also dictated by total training volume, training intensity, total training load, I guess, and what the purpose of that athlete is. So carbs, when you need them, yeah, consume them. But even I think, and again, we'll probably get into this, but even when you think you don't need carbs, the reality is you do need them as well. And that whole concept of going very low carb for a period of time, I think gradually, I think more and more people are seeing the downsides of that. And we're seeing that in the research. And, you know, why bother going low carb or ketogenic? For what purpose? I mean, unless you're an epileptic, can't really see too much reason why you would go ketogenic now.
Does it suit a less active person's lifestyle more? I mean, obviously we're eating and fueling for fitness and performance at the higher level here. So for someone who's just doing a 5K here and there, or just even not training and just eating, does it suit a little bit better because it kind of kicks out a lot of the junk?
Oh, what, a keto diet? What, you start eating a heap of bacon and butter and
well, I mean, I guess
I think it actually becomes quite difficult. It becomes quite difficult to do like a really low carb, high fat diet. Like, it actually becomes like any of these diets, the reason people don't stick with them because they're difficult to maintain. Like, the best diet is the one that you can maintain for consistency over a consistent period of time. Come back to your being adaptable. You're no longer bound by a single rule. You're adaptable and flexible in your nutritional approach. But you know what? You can stay consistent with that because there's flexibility. And so, like, you don't have to go high fat, low carb. Sorry. You don't have to go high fat, low carb in order to change, like lose weight or improve body composition or improve your ability to use fat as a fuel source. You maybe just have to reduce total carb intake, or maybe some of those refined carbohydrates that aren't required because you are less active. You're only doing 7 or 8 hours training a week. And so, again, ultra processed foods probably aren't required because your caloric requirements aren't that high. Mm-hmm. But carbohydrates are fruits. Carbohydrates are vegetables. Now, the type of vegetable is going to then dictate the caloric density and the carbohydrate density. So leafy greens, lots of fiber, very low calorie, very low carbohydrate content. Start putting in some root vegetables, starchy carbs, okay? Slightly more carbohydrates. Now you go rices, pastas, whole grains. Okay, more carbohydrates. Maybe some less fiber in there, maybe still fiber. Lots of quality micronutrition. You control your calorie intake, but you're still having carbs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but you're not bound by like, oh, I can't have carbs and therefore I can't do this. Like you just choose the type of carbs that fit what you're doing. And again, like that's, it's a big part of how we sort of dictate in, or not dictate, we outline and provide a plan to athletes with Fuel in that they see colors. They see a traffic light system. They see red, lower amounts of carbs, yellow, moderate, green, higher amounts of carbs. And they, you become conditioned to that. It's Pavlov's dog, isn't it? Oh, I know what my favorite red meal is. Like you said, you know, what did you say? Your red breakfast would be exactly what you said. Some avocado, piece of toast, a couple of eggs, maybe some chicken, whatever. Perfect red breakfast.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, I want to see your response when I say this name. Pete Jacobs.
Pete Jacobs. Oh, how do I know Pete Jacobs?
He was Ironman World Championship.
Oh, yeah.
Or world champion once. And he's an Aussie, I think. And it was 2019, I believe, right before COVID. And we were racing in China, I think Beijing or something like that. And every day at breakfast, the guy would have the biggest plate of bacon with about 6 egg yolks, not the egg whites. You got get rid of those whites because there's probably carbs in there. I don't know how. So even during the race, he was eating beef jerky. And he was so ketogenic, meat focused. It blew my mind the amount. As a pro triathlete, whose performance was never the same. Like, how do smart people make these types of decisions that lead them so far astray?
So you're saying when he went ketogenic, performance dropped?
Is that what you saw? It seemed that way. Like he just, I mean, he was eating beef jerky on the bike. I just can't see that effectively fueling.
Yeah,
him.
I mean, smart guys and women make stupid decisions at certain points in their career. And I guess that would probably be one. I don't know his story, you know, as well as what you do, but yeah, I certainly wouldn't be recommending a heap of bacon and egg yolks and beef jerky if you were wanting to, you know, smash a T100 or an Ironman race these days. I think, you know, the evidence is pretty clear that carbohydrates are going to be the primary fuel source when efforts get hard. And
I always tell athletes carbohydrates are our currency. That's like, you're when you're out there on the bike and on the run, you are wheeling and dealing with carbs. How much are you paying? How much can you take in? Like, it's an exchange.
And that exchange, unfortunately, is always going to be in a negative. Even if you're taking in 120 grams an hour, if you're pushing a decent, you know, power and whatnot. But, you know, for any athletes like yourself and the athletes you're talking about, and we're talking about in T100 or Ironman, very good age groupers, you know, they're always going to be a caloric deficit, even if you're taking in the highest amount of carbohydrates that your body can take in. And that's just reality. So, but on the flip side to that, Nick, and that's, I think, a really important point for athletes to understand, not everyone needs 120 grams of carbs an hour because their power output and ultimately their energy expenditure is not that high because their FTP is 180. They're riding a race at 140 watts and total caloric expenditure is probably only in that sort of 400 calorie an hour, something like that. You're probably not requiring any more than 60 to 70 grams of carbs per hour for those types of athletes. And you're probably going to feel a lot better taking in that amount of carbs than trying to stuff yourself full of fructose and glucose when actually you probably don't even need any fructose. You don't need those multiple, you know, transporter type carbohydrates because actually 60 grams is enough for your system. And that is really important because I think everyone looks at what, you know, the top athletes are doing and what we do with the pros and then says, well, I got to be doing that as well. And it's like, no, you probably don't. You can push your carbohydrate capacity. We call it carbohydrate capacity. So you can push that in training with the products you plan on racing with. Track your, you know, intake of these carbs, See what your average intake is. See what your peak intake is. Marry that up with how do you feel in terms of gastrointestinal distress, signs and symptoms. And then looking at numbers with your coach. Did you do better? What's your threshold? What is your capacity to take in large amounts of carbs? And then train that. And that's going to be an individual thing. It's not always going to be 120.
And when we look at, you know, the data we have available to us as athletes, we can measure in kilojoules because of watts, how much energy we've put to the pedals. Now, would you use that as like an indication of caloric deficit or a way to, well, if I am pushing 230 watts for 2 hours, looks like this amount of kilojoules was expended. Should I look at that in terms of carbs per hour to replenish, or not replenish, because that's probably not ever going to happen, but just to intake to keep going? Is that what Fuel N does?
Well, so you've got the works, which is done in kilojoules, and then you've got like mechanical efficiency, don't you? So you're going to lose a bit. So you generally take off around 20%, somewhere 21, 22% off that. That actually equates pretty closely to the same number in calories. So you pretty much can sort of just flip whatever that work number is into calories, there or thereabouts. And you can look on Training Peaks or TriDot and see that, like, that the number's pretty close. So as a ballpark figure, you know, if you've done 1,000 kilojoules, you've probably done 900, you know, close to 1,000 calories. Are you going to replace all of that in training? No. That's never the goal either. You're never going to try and replace 100% of the calories in training. It just becomes very difficult. But you want to minimize that hole, especially if you've got second sessions coming up or, you know, training throughout the week. So then the rest of the training, the meals around that session are very important. And I think using swimming as an example is a really good one, because what we're seeing based on some really cool equations coming out about estimations of caloric expenditure in the pool is that it is fairly extreme. Like, it is really high. We've got pro athletes with estimates of, say, 1,500 calories in less than an hour.
Whoa. In the pool.
Yeah. I mean, Rachel Zelenkis is a very good swimmer. She's covering a hell of a lot of distance. Her efficiency is very good, but she's covering a lot of distance in an hour, you know, 6,000 yards or whatnot. And so we're seeing these huge numbers. So then, okay, we're never, even if we got in 100 grams of carbs per hour into her, that's 400 calories. You do the simple math. She's burning 1,500. She's taking in 400 calories. She's still in a 900 hole. So meals before swimming, it's a non-negotiable in Fuel N. We are recommending a meal. Now, depending on the athlete, the color of that meal is going to change. Most athletes will probably just have a simple red snack. What's that red snack? I always say piece of toast. You talk about time being time poor, have a piece of toast. Honestly, couldn't care if it's sourdough, whole wheat, multigrain, or white. With most athletes, carbs. Just get something into you, get some carbs in, put on a tablespoon of jam. That's 15 more grams of carbs. Maybe a tablespoon of almond butter if you need some fat and extra calories. That's a red snack. Do you know what a yellow snack is?
Oh, right now?
What if I said to you, okay, that's a red snack, and I said yellow snack is, you know, 50 grams of carbs, what would you do? What would I recommend for a yellow snack?
Probably something
two
with
pieces. Two pieces.
Oh, okay. Well,
have two pieces of toast. Have two pieces of toast. Okay. Keep it simple. Yeah. Someone like Rachel, she's trying to eat 100 grams of carbs before that swim session.
She needs a little bread.
Yeah. I mean, it gets more difficult. So then she's using things like additives. So maybe she has, she might have some oats or something like that. She will eat fiber before hard sessions as well. So training the gut, it's a good thing to do. But she may use things like maple syrup, honey, because maple syrup, despite its very low bulk, is very high in calories. So two tablespoons will give you 30 grams of carbs.
That's good.
That's great. Doesn't even add to the bulk of that, that meal. So she'll have 100 grams before. She may consume anywhere up to 100 grams in that pool session. And then she's having 100 grams of carbs after that session. by 7:30, 8:30 in the morning, she's already had 300 grams of carbs.
Man, that's
for
nuts.
Some athletes won't even consume 300 grams of carbs an entire day.
Well, I mean, just personally, I've always been probably an anomaly when it comes to some of this stuff. Is I would show up to a 5:30 a.m. master session. I'd swim 5-6K, variations of pace and speeds. I wouldn't drink anything. I wouldn't eat anything. I would never have an energy or a net energy lull. I'd feel ecstatic. And I've always been really effective with fasted workouts in the morning. Now I crush food immediately afterwards. And sometimes now I'll drink a little bit during, but Scott, I've had problems where I've had exercise-induced hypoglycemia quite a bit, where I'll take in carbs and then within 8 to 15 minutes, I hit this bonk that is just crazy. So I've had to try to avoid that. And I wish I could take in more sometimes. But anyways, it's crazy to see that.
That's really good to hear. And that's something you like, you know, just want to work through that now. Like, okay, meal timing does become important for someone like you who gets this rebound hypoglycemia. So you might be saying, okay, now the problem is your session's at 5:30 in the morning. So yeah. What you
I don't do that anymore.
But you typically recommend, okay, maybe try and eat 60 minutes before that session. The other flip side might be literally just before you jump in the water.
Yeah.
I want you to take in maybe double gel. You know, maybe you have 50 grams of carbs. And because you're about to start moving, your liver's going to start to release fructose, which is converted to glucose and whatnot. And actually that may level you out because you're already exercising and you're going to be consistently exercising. And that exogenous carbs, the carbs you just took in 10 to 15 minutes before, plus the fact you're exercising, may offset that rebound hypoglycemia. And that would be something to test. And there's a number of things in that as well, because like, okay, maybe 10 to 15 minutes before the start of the race, what do? We would recommend to an athlete. And I used to do one gel. I'm like double gels, especially if you're doing an Ironman. Well, think about it. You're about to do
double gel makes so much sense.
Think about it. Like you're about to do an Ironman swim. For the average punter, what's that take? 70 minutes? Maybe a bit more.
Yeah.
Average. So you're now going to do something and you're telling me that you should only take in 30 grams of carbs before doing that high intensity swim. Why wouldn't you take in 50, 60, maybe even try and take in like, you know, maybe 80. Maybe you're taking in two Morton 160s, taking 80 grams straight off the bat. Yeah. Now you've obviously eaten your breakfast and you've drip fed in carbs, but you're just now you're thinking, okay, what are the energy requirements of the athlete and how do you manipulate that energy intake to best work with that athlete and what they are hoping to achieve? And so that's cool. Like when you start practicing that in the pool, and I mean, we can talk about Ari here. You watch any of his YouTube videos. I mean, there's Precision Hydration everywhere. And yes, yeah. Okay, they are a sponsor, but I can tell you now, I mean, I've never seen so many boxes of Precision, and they are getting whittled down very quickly because he's taking in 90 grams, you know, easily 90 grams an hour in fluids. And he's also having gels on the side of the pool. Now, it's not normal what he's doing. I get that. But you just said you take in, you know, you were doing 6,000 yards and you were doing nothing. You did it very well. Could you have been better? That would be my question. Like I always say to athletes who say, oh, yeah, I do everything fasted. I'm like, whoopity-doo. Like imagine if you ate some food, you might be way better. And that's where I would challenge athletes with the fasted stuff. I get it. Like you may have to work on it to improve your ability to improve your gut, you know, and train your gut to get better at coping with food before exercise, but it's definitely trainable. And if you do that, you might be really surprised at the results.
I definitely agree with you. It's not something I've tried to just use as a chip on my shoulder. I've wanted to improve that. And now I've just mainly started taking in carbs within 15, 20 minutes of a session. That way I can make sure that I've got stuff going on.
And but, I wasn't saying whoopity-doo to you.
You're right.
It was a hypothetical sort of whoopity-doo to any athlete who says, you know, I'm better on faster training and that's what I do. And, you know, but there's always going to be Yeah, you mentioned Pete Jacobs with keto. I'm sure there's going to be some ketogenic athletes out there who are phenomenal, and they do amazing things, and that's great. That's, again, the beautiful thing about being a human being, isn't it? There's always going to be these anomalies that smash it out of the park, and you know, they do things that aren't the norm, and you know, that then leads to a crazy diet that everyone tries to follow for a week, and it fails.
And that is kind of why I opened this the way I did, is like, we are so positively and negatively influenced by what we see, because the problem, I think, and this is a great way to kind of tie this up, is if you can control your environment of your eating environment and the planning associated with meals, meal prep, and awareness of what you have to eat in the next 2 to 3 meals, and you can embrace the effect that you're going to get a lot of good feeling, a lot of good community, you're going to feel good about what you're doing no matter what it is, then I think the performance just takes care of itself. Because, I mean, happy athletes are fast athletes no matter what. And if you're stressed about a diet that you have got to stick to because it's, you know, it's what you saw somebody else doing, it's not going to work for you the way it's working for them. I've done 6 months on everything. I was progesterone dominant. I was pudgy, and I was storing more fat than I could ever imagine. And I was training 30 hours a week, and it was because I wasn't eating enough. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things you come across with this. Men and women together were so paranoid about how much, because calories in, calories out thing just is like always on our mind. And it's a bit scary, but I think even if I overeat, I know that I need it because I've got a fuel for the next day, for the next session. And I never gain a pound anymore because I just don't stress myself out of that.
Yeah. And, you know, and this is the, like, I love what you're saying there, and I will sort of put my own spin on it, because
please do.
You're very lean. Like, you are lean, and that's great. Like, you're obviously conscious of what you eat. So when you need fuel and you want to eat fuel, absolutely. And I always say that, and you're in a good, healthy state. You know, I assume things like your blood sugars, HbA1c and whatnot are in good state, and you've had a look under the bonnet, you've done some blood tests, you also feel good, like your sleep's under control, your mood is good, your energy is good, your willingness to train. There are people on the other side, though, that where the calorie equation is important, and that energy in, energy out balance does need to be considered. And maybe for a specific period of time, they do need to dial it in, mm-hmm. because they got themselves in a state that maybe is unhealthy. Maybe they did put on weight or underweight. And it does go both sides of the equation. Like, you could be underweight and you actually really need to dial in your energy intake and increase, like I said, with Aria and a female that I'm working with. Because if you aren't aware of how many calories you need and you're not potentially understanding how much you're taking in, then you can go too far to the left and be in a caloric deficit. Likewise, if you're already struggling with body composition and weight issues, and you're just eating at lib, and you don't understand the nutritional science and the density of what you're eating, then that's also going to have a negative impact on how you respond as well. So,
yeah, knowledge.
Again, horses for courses. And this is the cool thing about nutrition, isn't it? It's like, treat yourself as that N=1. Work out what works best for you based around certain principles that are grounded in science, and then manipulate and become adaptable to that nutritional intake that then will fit your environment and fit your life.
I mean, you said it way more eloquent than I ever could have. And it, obviously, if you are in a bind and you do need to get a hold of it, like Scott and your team, everything at Fuel In is designed to take a lot of the guesswork away. You can work with certified real life pro athlete nutritionists and folks like yourself who've been there, done that. I know your team is of the highest pedigree for handling the human area of this as well, not just the, hey, this is the roadmap, and if you don't follow it, that's it. I think you all are super flexible. You're very pragmatic with the reality of what we're all feeling as athletes trying to balance energy expenditures with being human, having fun, having drinks, and having a few pieces of cake and some sweets, like who doesn't?
Eat some pizza. I mean, every Saturday night we have, and we used to call it a reward meal, and actually we got rid of that, and it was just like I actually
This
can't
is
remember what we
normal.
said. I think we just call it the enjoy a Saturday night meal or something. What do we call it? Now just trying to think. We call it the weekend special, and it's
The
always
weekend
green.
special.
It's always green. It's not a reward meal or anything like that. It's just, look, the reality is Saturday night, go for it. Don't be bound by anything, whether you want to call it a cheat meal or whatnot. It's not a cheat meal. It's just like relax,
Yeah, it's be a human.
be human. Don't go mad. Like, don't go and eat 4,000 calories, but like, but don't think too much about it. I was chatting actually. I've chatted to Holly and Sky about this, and it's like they don't even ask me if they're like got something on, like something important. They'll be like, yeah, whatever. I can see that he's telling me to eat a yellow meal or whatnot. And they're like, I'm going double green. And I'm like, yeah, because it's your anniversary or it's something special. Like, I do laugh when athletes like literally reach out to me and like, oh, I've got this really special thing on Friday night. Is it all right if I don't eat the red meal that you've got planned or something? I'm like, oh my God, please do whatever you like. Like, again, that process versus perfection should resonate with athletes. Like, okay, don't change every meal, but if you need to change a meal to fit your life, like, go for it. It's one meal ain't going to break, that packet of Doritos or whatever isn't going to, or the pizza or not, it's not going to derail your entire week. But if you're doing it every single night of the week, okay, then it's a different story. So, process versus perfection.
I mean, the habits we form and come to rely on for emotional comfort or just escapism or just because it's all we buy. Like we have the best part about everything, Scott, is we have total control of all this if we just remember that. It's not somebody else dictating this. We're not at the whims of some hierarchical meal planner. It's like you've got to do what works for you and you've got to control it. And if you're not willing to control it because you're scared, you will not get success. And that's why breaking down the barriers and sticking to some very simple facts, like you and your team are able to do at Fuel and to make sure that the training program is going to have X amount of TSS from Training Peaks. And that's going to be calculated into like a glycolytic expenditure throughout the whole week. But FuelN's going to tell you on the day-to-day how to not, I mean, I'd say, yeah, meticulously plan and fuel. So you're not having to guess anymore. You're not having to relinquish control because of you've not been planning. That's why I love what you all are trying to do. You've seen a hole within the industry. You've seen a hole within our mindsets and our humanism. And you're taking a very practical in science-based approach to this, and that's where I think it's going to succeed in changing the lives of a lot of athletes who've been struggling. So I think this product, you can find all the show notes that we're going to put in there. We'll have the video up on YouTube. We'll put Scott's direct cell phone number on there so you can call him at any. No, I'm just kidding. We won't do that. But we'll make sure you can get a hold of this company and reach out and get some consultations. We actually on Real Tri Squad, our in-house dietitian, Megan Foley, she's going to be under the FuelN banner, and we're so thrilled about that.
Well, she's already in. And Megan's fantastic, by the way. And she was actually on the Feisty podcast the other day and did such a great job, and with Haley, and it was really, I really enjoyed listening to it. And thank you so much for the introduction to Megan. She's a wonderful human being as well as a fantastic registered dietitian and actually training partner to Sky. So yeah, I was like, oh God, this is like this crazy world. And I'm like, Sky, don't leave me. Don't go to Megan, please.
She's like, I can ride with my dietitian. I don't need you,
Yeah,
Scott. I'm out
exactly. I'm
here.
like, oh God. So she's probably fact checking everything I say now. But Nick, I really appreciate what you're saying about that. And a couple of key things you said is like, we provide a plan which provides a framework. And I think that's important because that gives an overview of the week coming to allow the athlete to, prepare mentally, but also physically prepare for what's coming in the week based around the training. And we also don't provide like, chicken on Monday and fish for lunch on, we provide a framework that is flexible. So And that, I think, is a really important part of the program for athletes to understand is you have that flexibility, but you follow some very basic principles. But we will tell you, you know, target macros for every meal, snacks, main meals, recommended in-session targets, but they're targets, okay? Like, you may not hit 40 grams of protein for breakfast with 50 grams of carbs. You know what? You got 30 grams in, 30 grams of protein in. Awesome. You probably did better than what you normally would. Just take that 10 grams. You got it. It's spare change. It's going to come somewhere later in the day. Go for it. You don't have to hit the exact numbers. That's just never going to happen in real life. Even if you're tracking, you think your tracking is amazing. You've still got measurement error on the back of a label, with your scale, with MyFitnessPal, with Fuel In, whatever. There's always measurement error. So don't beat yourself up about it. Like, if you're in the range and by the end of the day, you got very close to your totals, you've done a great job. Give yourself a pat on the back. Tomorrow's another day. Do it again.
Well said. Just like training in general, how oftentimes are you going to spend exactly the amount of time at that power without fluctuation? You've got to have that fudge factor.
Training's a little bit easier to get very close. I always have this like challenge where it's an hour session or an hour and a half session. I like try and hit my Garmin exactly on 1.5. So it's like exactly. So I get that 100% record. And I know it's a terrible thing to do, but training's no different to nutrition, or nutrition's no different from training. It's just consistency. It's adhering to the program and doing it well as best you can based on what life throws at you.
Absolutely. And you can hire Scott if you're lucky enough to be there just over your ear. Hey, buddy, you're fine. Hey, lad, no problem. But hey, thanks so much, buddy.
That's a big part of it, isn't it? Just, again, like, I think the world of nutrition at the moment is moving very, very fast. And there's a lot of talk of macros and grams and all this, but the reality is everything we talked about today is actually nutrition coaching, because you eat food. So what are some breakfasts I could try? What are some snacks I could have before swimming? Like, that's what we try and do as coaches. Now, not everyone will have access to the coaches, but at least the app can provide some inspiration around what snacks or meals that you might decide to try. And if you need more help because you've got issues or specific requirements, like you would with any normal dietitian or nutritionist, you'd book a consult. And that's what I always find funny is they're like, oh, you guys have got an app, but I'll speak to someone else. I'm like, well, there are real people as well. Like, we actually do talk and we are human. And
if you message within the app, you will get a response.
You actually get a human response. It's not a bot or anything. So anyway, it's a really cool space, mate. I think nutrition's exploding. It continues to amaze me with the research coming out. And I was asked a question yesterday about, like, do you think we're at like that point of learning where we're not going to learn any more about nutrition? And I honestly laughed out loud and I was like, man, we're not even at the start.
Like, it's as much as we understand about the ocean, as much as we understand about nutrition.
Correct. So, good way to finish.
Hey man. Well, thanks again. We'll put everything you can need to get connected with Fuel In the show notes. And of course, thank you so much, Scott. We want to bring you on again. This is a conversation that certainly could have gone on longer, but I've got other notes that I didn't even get to talk about. And Scott, I know you've got more knowledge to shed. So thanks again. We'll have you on again soon.
Thanks, mate. Really enjoyable. And that code for anyone listening is RTS, and they can take advantage of that. And that will give them a pretty good monthly discount off the Fuel In program if they want to give it a try.
Yeah, please do give it a try. RTS when you sign up at Fuel In, and we'll have that also in the show notes. Thanks so much, Scott.
Awesome. Thanks, mate. I got ish to do, flying through the sky in my parachute, dancing on the couch like I'm Tommy Cruise on a one-man mission trying to see it through.